It's Magneto Mel issuing clearances you can understand. This is Push to Talk on EAA Radio.
Welcome back. You are listening to Push to Talk. I am Magneto Mel. And now I am joined by our lovely guest from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. We've got Leanne Martin, who was here yesterday. And
Chris
Karanoff. Yes, what's your last name?
Karanoff.
Chris Karanoff. And we'll talk a little bit more about the controller's perspective here in this aviation endeavor. So how do you get to become a controller, anyway?
Well, a lot of questions get asked, you know, about ATC and how you become a controller. It all starts, I guess, with a passion for the industry, and then once you get old enough, going to school for it. I went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, which is a collegiate training initiative school. There's 36 of those located around the United States that you can go to receive the credibility to become an air traffic controller. And after that, basically, you got to wait for a little while for your background investigation and all your information to go through with the FAA. And after that, you go sit for about 2.5 months in Oklahoma City, get your training, and off to your facility you go.
Now, you said old enough, but there's also a limit by when you can start this, correct?
That's correct. You have to be by your 31st birthday. The month of your 31st birthday is the cutoff line, because obviously...
Of your training or of your hire?
Hire date. So basically,
so you got to time your training a little bit before
correct.
That.
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, if you're pushing 30 years old, you better get moving.
So how long does it take to get through that training program? And then, you know, you said you sit a couple of months and.
Well,
Oak
I graduated Embry-Riddle in 2000 in December of 2004, and I waited and was actually my first day in Oklahoma City was middle of April of 2006. So basically, it was almost a year and a half, almost 2 years. From start to finish, from graduation of college to the first day of Oklahoma City.
So you probably want to start before you see that 3-0.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And then there's a cutoff like pilots for how long you can
right.
you can do it. Correct?
You're forced out the door at age 56, and that's obviously, you know, so you can get 25 years to receive full retirement. And basically, they offer extensions after that, but they're few and far between to stay employed with the FAA.
I know a lot of people can get, there were a few controllers that were sort of grandfathered into it.
Correct.
When they were hired before all those age restrictions.
Right.
Do you have any insight into why, I mean, 31, 56, those sound like pretty random numbers. Do you have any insight into how that came about?
Well, human factors is a huge thing, and as you grow older, your memory and retention and how fast your synapses fire, you know, makes you a little slower. Air traffic is a very multitasking job, and you know, as you get older, that doesn't happen quite as rapidly as I am finding out.
So what's it like being a controller? What are some of the benefits of your job?
Well, I can speak from the younger generation's perspective. You know, I've been employed with the FAA now for just about almost 6 years, and you can honestly sit here and talk all you want, but air traffic control, you don't really hear about, you know, the multiple lives that are saved on a daily basis. You never see that in the news. All you see in the news is when something goes wrong, and basically, we're trying to, you know. Part of our reloaded committee and our reloaded part of our NATCA, our National Air Traffic Controllers Association, we're trying to push the, you know, positive reinforcement. You know, this is a great job. We love what we do. Every single air traffic controller that you'll talk to will swear up and down that they love what they do. Basically, you know, one of the greatest things that for me, you know, when I get done working a busy session on the frequency and I'm wrapping up my headset and I know that basically I unplug and my job is done, I can sit there and honestly say, yeah, I did well there. And, you know, taking second to that is when you're on the frequency and it's busy and, you know, a pilot comes on and says, great job, center. That's very, very rewarding, and I can speak on behalf of a lot of other controllers that feel the same way.
And so you said you're the new generation of controllers. What does that mean?
Well, obviously, you know, there's waves of controllers that are, you know, getting ready to retire. There's waves of controllers that are coming in, and I guess basically, you know, from speaking from the younger perspective, I'm just part of that new wave that is starting to come in the door and getting going as far as that's concerned. So, Leanne might have a better perspective as to, you know, the different generations of air traffic controllers, but, you know, I mean, we all share the same when we say that, you know, this is the greatest job in the world, and, you know, pushing 10 is something great to do.
Well, there have been a lot of technological and organizational changes in the past 5-10 years, so has that had an impact? I mean, as a newer controller, this is the way it just works.
Right.
But if you've been there for a while, have you seen how some of this impacts the way, I guess, training on the job when you get your first people online, or how that job rolls?
Safety culture. We're making a huge transition in the atmosphere of the aviation industry right now, especially in air traffic. In when I first came in, it was more of a reactionary process, that an accident was investigated and then to find out what the problem was, whereas now we're approaching it as more of a safety culture, and that would be actually taking a look at the process prior to an event happening. And we do that a couple different ways. Right now we're looking into performance management of controllers, and that would be pilots are going to hear a lot more coming from us when we need a response from them. We don't want pilots to think that, you know, that we're policing them at all, but we really need, when we're saying we need a response from that now, we need a response from that. We have supervisors monitoring us now more often, looking for deficiencies in us and in the system, and hopefully if we need recurrent training, we're getting more recurrent training or a different way of training. It's
a lot more scenario-based training these days as opposed to just procedural.
That is correct. We're also looking for procedural deficiencies. A perfect example is we have the Air Traffic Safety Action Program, where we can voluntarily report deficiencies in us or in the system. Perfect example at our airport, we had a lot of runway incursions, and my peers would report those, and we took a look at that, and it ended up that there was poor signage on the airport. So it wasn't really a deficiency in the pilots, but the pilots were having a deviation because of the signage problem. We took care of the signage problem. We also put it as a hot spot, and we're not having those issues at that area as much as we did before.
And I know, you know, the controller's job is infamously known as one of the most stressful jobs. Is that still the case, or have there been a lot of changes to try and alleviate that kind of pressure off of each individual and sort of spread around the responsibility a little bit, or is it still a pretty stressful job?
I say that any job that you care about is stressful. And as Chris said, I don't find my job stressful. I find moments of my job stressful, as anybody would. We love our job, and we have the type of personality that makes us successful in our job. Wouldn't you agree, Chris?
Yeah, we could pretty much always explain ourselves as being adrenaline junkies. I mean, I like when I'm busy and I get out of position and my armpits are sweaty. I like that.
You know. So, what about your colleagues around you? Are they just as happy?
As long as I'm not smelling, I think I'm doing all right.
Would you say that there is then an ideal personality type for?
Oh, without a doubt, this job can't be
pretty
done by
A-type
everybody.
Personality.
This job cannot be done by every single person that walks through the door saying they want to be an air traffic controller, and that's the fact of the matter. We're a rare breed, and it's truly an art what we do, and it goes unappreciated a lot. Not by just people in the aviation community, but just by people that just don't know what we do. You know, we'll be sitting there explaining, hey, we're air traffic controllers, and a lot of people think that we're the guys that are on the runway with the light sticks, you know. And
one point in time, that's who
right,
you were. Well,
exactly.
Not the light sticks, but the semaphores.
Correct. So, I mean, explain what we do and how we become controllers is, we go around, you know, NACA goes around the United States and especially to the CTI schools, and we try and inform the students that are at the schools what to expect, We try and give them the best estimate as far as time frames, and that's just, you know, we have no clue really. So we just bring 3, 4, 5 controllers and say, well, this is how long it took for me, this is how long it took for him. Could have been 6 months for him, could have been
like a lot of educational programs.
Correct.
That,
you know,
bring
and,
in on
and,
the job.
And basically, yeah, we're just trying to give them you know, the best information possible to, yeah, as to what to expect from the time that they graduate their college to, you know, when they walk in the door of their facility, what, you know, how the process is going to transpire along the way.
And as we're getting toward the end of our time, how can you maybe direct somebody toward, you said they're the schools and you mentioned Embry-Riddle, but that's probably not the only game in town, and if you don't live
correct
right there, so how do you find a school?
Well, you can,
and
you can just go, you can Google collegiate training initiative.
Google just about everything.
Pretty yeah much, and that'll bring you to part of the FAA website that has.
And collegiate training initiative is specific to controller.
Correct. Oh, you just type
education
in ATCTI, air traffic CTI schools, and that'll bring you, I think it's listed on the FAA website there. I'm pretty sure there's like 36 schools around the U.S. that have offered that.
And so, where are you guys on the field if some people want to come by and chat with you about this?
We are just east of the control tower on a lot, or 460, I believe it is, and right, we would love for everyone to come here and visit with us. We can tell them more about air traffic, answer any procedural questions that you may have, so please come and visit us.
Great. Well, I thank you very much for being in here, Chris, Leanne. With
thanks
National,
for taking the time. Thank you.
National Air Traffic Controllers Association, full of information. Thank you very much. And you are listening to Push to Talk. I am Magneto Mel, and up next, Wireless Mike will be taking the rest of my show. So welcome to Oshkosh, and you are listening to EAA 93.3 FM and EAARadio.net.
You're tuned to EAA Radio, the voice of EAA, 93.3 FM, 1210 AM, and online at EAARadio.net.
Uncontrolled Airspace is back on EAA Radio.
I've been gone for a long time, it seems.
The popular aviation podcast will borrow our microphone this week.
Not that we've ever done that before.
No, right, exactly. Yeah.
For 90 minutes of virtual hangar flying.
You know, it all depends on the winds.
And I'm sorry, what day is that?
It's Sunday morning.
But keep going.
At 9:30.
My all-time favorite is standing on the deck and actually interacting with some of our listeners at Oshkosh.
And listeners can do just that at the EAA Radio Studio on the flight line and just south of the Brown Arch.
I wanted to be first.
Sunday morning at 9:30 on or at EAA Radio.
You really lose track quickly, don't you, son?
This is Ashley Carlson with your EAA Radio News Break. Thursday night, the Young Eagles program hosted their Gathering of Eagles event. Former chairman of the Young Eagles, actor Harrison Ford, was in attendance. The fundraiser benefits the EAA Young Eagles Youth Flying Program. Their goal is to get young people interested in aviation and get them in the sky. To help raise money for the program, a one-of-a-kind Blue Angels-designed Ford Mustang was auctioned off, as well as dinner for two with Morgan Freedman, along with other items in the auction. Friday morning at the Welcome Center, Dick Napinski, EAA's communications director, gave details on the F-16 incident that took place Thursday afternoon.
For those of you who may not have heard about it, we did have an F-16 that went off the north end of the runway, and that pilot was fine. Air Force is in, Department of Defense is investigating that one, and they'll have to take charge of that one.
FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt appeared at AirVenture's annual Meet the Administrator Forum on Thursday. He discussed topics including the current funding crisis. He noted how aviation is the sole user of leaded gasoline, and expressed confidence that EPA exemptions would provide enough time to help develop a usable replacement fuel. He also spoke about the transformation of airspace and air traffic management going from ground-based to using a satellite system, along with other productive ideas for the future. This is Ashley Carlson, EAA Radio News.